Also, it's not mentioned here. I know it's in some of these papers. And that is, when you hear of terrible, tragic experiences and terrible things that people have done to people, where do I draw the line in compassion? Because I can be so compassionate, I can drive them more into their bitterness. You understand what I'm saying? That's so terrible. That's so awful. You know, how can anybody do that? But that's not really going to help them, because they've got to. I mean, it's part of their history. You can't change the history, but I can change how history is affecting me right now. And that's what counseling is doing, is helping to change a person's history. Because it's not history. It's not history, even though I wasn't living at home and I was married and I still hated my dad. I mean, he's not around. He's not even there. I'm a pastor. Why should I hate my dad? Did I hate my dad all the time? No. If I wasn't thinking about my dad, if, you know, my mom didn't call, even my mom called didn't cause me. Where I hated my dad is when I saw him. And here I'm a pastor and I'm having this conflict. All this emotion and fear and everything rises up, and I've got kids. He loves my kids. There he is. And it was involuntary and I hated it. And I didn't know what to do. Until I went to a Gothic seminar, then I wasn't sure that I wanted to do what he was saying. You know, I mean, but I found there was, I was not trapped. And Bill would go, oh, I feel so sorry for you, Jim. Oh, I don't know how you know. He's not going to help me. You know, do you realize that these feelings give Satan an advantage over you? 2 Corinthians says so. Do you realize you're grieving the Holy Spirit? Do you realize you're doing the topos issue? You're giving place to Satan in your life? Have you wondered why you're being defeated? Until you get right with your dad, you will be defeated. In areas that have nothing to do with my dad, because of what the scripture says when I have those things that are wrong. You know, making the connection. I mean, I don't want you to say I've seen worse. But see, there's a point where compassion can be devastating and no compassion can be devastating. So where is the drawing? I can't tell you where the line is, but you got a sense in your spirit where the line is. Because when people are hurting and people are crying in my office, I do not make light of it. I don't say, well, that's you should have been here last week. Man, you think that's something to cry about? You know, no. I have tremendous compassion for them. And I have times teared up, too. I'm not a real weeper, but I have weep because I couldn't believe how... You know, when the guy told me his mother had him in a creek and he had to invite those demons in at 5 years of age until he'd get out of a frozen creek, I could see this kid standing there for hours not wanting to invite those things into his life. And I got teary. I mean, his tears are running down his cheeks. I mean, how could I be hard-hearted? I mean, my dad was bad, but they never had me in a creek inviting demons in my life. That was going to make this guy eventually kill himself in the bathroom, hanging himself and leaving a wife and 3 kids through all of the awful. I mean, that was the beginning of the awful stuff. Well, they already sexually abused him before that, but, you know, really when he started inviting demons into his life and giving himself over to demons, his life really went south, and he was brilliant. He lived 2 lives you would never dream. This very brilliant, brilliant man. Who people sought after. Universities. Often we couldn't call and talk to him on the phone. He was at this university or that university lecturing on his specialty. And when I'm talking about not people with BAs, we're talking about the grad level department. He's going in, going up to Mayo Clinic and lecturing there a lot. This, you know, and so you see this lecturer, this brilliant man. And then you see this horrible other side. And he was very fortunate most of the time to keep them separate. all the demonic, all this satanic, all this occultic stuff, all this horrible stuff, to keep it separate from him unless he was triggered. And remember, we said a trigger is something that brings back a memory or a hurtful experience. The thing itself isn't bad, but it opens up a whole can of worms within me. And that guy with the drink did that. Now, he was trying to do anything bad, but it just triggered all the memories of a drinking father and the pain. And is he going to get mean tonight, or is he not going to get mean? And is he going to try to hurt my mom? And, you know, night after night, living like that is not fun for years and through your teenage years. So this is a very good one. Don't take up offenses at all. And some of you, you say, why are you telling me this? I never would do that. I know. You're too hard-hearted. And maybe you need to be a little more, you know, tender. And someone else, you're too tender. You know, you're not going to make it in counseling. And we've had people that have come and were prayer partners and said, I would never do this. I couldn't. It's just too awful. I said, yeah, but is it? What about these people out there that don't know how to get out of where they are and all these awful things happen to them? And because it makes me sad, I'm not going to try to help them. You understand? You shouldn't do it if that's not what God has asked you to do. But whatever you do, you're going to have some struggles. I don't care what it is, whether it's preaching. There's going to be times you don't want to preach. There are going to be times that when people walk out, they're glad you're over. You know, it was the longest half hour they sat, I don't know how long. I had a lady that would do two things in the first church, which wasn't exactly normal. She wore stockings that came up, and she'd stand in the aisle and pull up her stockings. Not anything. You know, she had to get her stockings up. They're going down, and I don't know if they came unhooked from her garter belt or something, and she'd pull them up and pull the other sock up. And she brought the newspapers and read the newspaper while I was preaching. I don't know what's worse, the garters or the newspaper. Come on. Hey, you guys aren't supposed to be eavesdropping in there. But, hey, I mean, you get anybody as a pastor, and then Ryan's got some goofy story. Well, his stories about marrying the couple and the best man and the best women were two dogs. Remember that? Were you here when Ryan told us that? And they were ring bearers or something. And then the leashes got all tangled and twisted, and the dogs are choking, and there's Ryan. The guy I led to Christ in my church at Granite Falls called me on the phone. I was teaching, was I counseling here or teaching at Calvary? I can't remember what. He said, Logan, you led me to Christ, and I finally found a girl, and I want to marry her, and we want you to come and perform the wedding up to the state of Washington. And I said, well, how'd you meet her? He said, oh, skydiving. I said, if you think I'm going to dive out of an airplane and perform a wedding as I'm falling towards the ground, you called the wrong guy. I mean, who knows? I mean, people do dumb stuff. Take her, take her. Amen. You're married. So you can find yourself in strange things, like I did with this big, important man with the wife and three people at his funeral. I told you about that one. You know, this guy that was head of Blue Cross or whatever. You know, I didn't know who he was. All this neat stuff about him in newspapers, big picture on front page. And then nobody's at the funeral. Nobody. You know, I wasn't prepared. I had a big message for thousands. And, I mean, it's like dumping the whole load on one calf. I just couldn't. And I mean, it just blew me away when I walked in. You know, and I walked in that little dinky room and there's three people with the pulpit right in front of them. Terrible. I'd rather sat in a chair, you know, with the Bible in my lap or something, but they didn't prepare me. So look through this, but this one be careful. If you have prejudices and you're burying them, they will pop out in counseling. You understand what I'm saying? I can't stand people that do that kind of stuff. When you get somebody that says, I do that kind of stuff, it's going to show on your kisser. It's going to show because you're trying so hard for it not to show. You know what I'm saying? I'm working too hard not to show anything. Or it just pops up. You do that, that is my, you know, that is the first thing on my list, that you would do something like that. And you better get rid of your prejudice. I mean, just go through Scripture and look at all the sins that are there. Just read through Leviticus and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you're going to get some really sick stuff. And the person knows that you don't think it's right, or they wouldn't come. They're not looking for you to agree. They want to get rid of this. But as soon as they see this disdain in your face. Now, I'll show disdain if, you know, well, everybody does it. Then you wouldn't want to see my face. But when I'm somebody is crying and they stumble out and it falls out something that is so vile that they have to say it, and I react in a negative, distasteful way, I feel sorry for the person that told you. And I know Jesus knows all this stuff and I don't. You know, look who we got hard on, and look who he didn't get hard on. He didn't get hard on the prostitute, but what do you think of Pharisees? You know what I mean? The religious leaders. I mean, when Jesus told you off, you didn't have to guess. You know, I think he was kind of upset. Maybe it was the whip in his hand. I have a clue here. And the fire in his eyes. Yeah. So I'm not saying there's a time to be hard on sin. It's when the person doing it thinks it's okay. Then I say, jump all over him, tell him he's horrible, awful, whatever. But when he knows he's horrible, awful, and ever, and he's telling you the thing that you think that no person should ever do anything like that, well, they shouldn't do things like that. Then you want to show that God can be there for him, God can heal him, but there can be consequences, ongoing consequences. One thing I didn't share, and I don't know how to tell you this, or how to deal with it, because I did not deal with it. I was counseling a fellow with AIDS from San Francisco, flew out there. He had a hardback Bible that was huge. You know, it wasn't quite like a pulpit Bible, but bigger than a regular Bible. And I don't know what it was, but it was maybe it was bigger print or something. But anyways, it was, you know, maybe as big as if you'd open this whole thing up, you know, and then turn it. It's big. And he's sitting there, and I'm having real compassion towards him. There's terrible stuff going on in his life, terrible stuff that went on in his life when he was younger and all this stuff. He's crying a lot of the time. But he is getting angrier and angrier, and I can see it. Maybe you can tell me what I could do differently. And I didn't have a prayer partner. But every day, it was like the volcano is getting more volcanic. And I was beginning to dread to go in there with him, you know, because he even though he was perverted, he was one of the, you know, weightlifter perverted type. And, I mean, you wouldn't guess. I mean, you look at him, you think, you know, this wouldn't be an issue with the guy, but it definitely was. And he's getting angrier and angrier, and I didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, he screams. He takes the Bible, throws it across the room, and thank God it was not where I was, and it hit the wall and fell down. He grabbed the door and screamed again, in anger, and I mean, just the most horrid, whatever. Threw the door open, it hit the wall so hard that Dan's office next door, he's got, you know, I graduated from here and all these things, diplomas and all that, nearly fell off his wall. He runs out of the building. You know, here's the waitress, our secretaries, seeing him. He runs out the front door, goes out in the parking lot, and disappears. And I thought, thank God he's gone, and I hope he never comes back. I hope he runs all the way to San Francisco. Because I kept waiting for this, waiting for this, and waiting for this, but I didn't know it was going to be that bad. All the counselors, we had a full-fledged account, all ran out of their offices because they were sure that he was attacking me. You know, anybody that mean, I mean, it's that big that Dan and a couple other counselors we had there came out of there, stopped their counseling, came out to find out, you know, did he knock me cold or what did he do to me? You know, and this was not usual. And he ran out. Now, he didn't touch me. You know, God protected me. But the issue is, I don't know with him how I could have done it differently. I have done it differently. What do you do when you see that as you're counseling, as you're getting closer and closer to the core stuff, there's this agitation, anger going? Now, a prayer partner, I want to pray against how much of that's the enemy. Because a number could be, remember, we can't disassociate the person from the enemy. You know, but the enemy can really working on the person and feeding that for him to get more and more angry and so on. And I've had stopped and I said, you're angry, aren't you? Yeah, I really am. But I'm not angry at you, Logan. I don't understand this. But I am welling up with anger. Now, I've done that. And I said, right now, why don't we pray and ask God, why are you so angry? I mean, if a guy can cry and he's not sad, a guy can be angry and he's not angry. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, the enemy can put his personality or these things in someone and it doesn't fit the situation. And that's where you catch it because you're going, I haven't said anything that he should be so angry about. I didn't say anything that this person should be crying like this. And I'm always real concerned about crying, sobbing. You know, when it, what's your name? Oh, brother, this is going to be a good one, you know. Paul, come on in. You know. I tell some of these muscle-bound characters that come that I got him in there, that Paul's going to protect me from them. You know, they don't look like they'd be that kind. But see, the person has to own the anger. Sometimes we don't know why, but by identifying it, it goes down. I knew if I pointed out this guy, and I don't know how I knew it, but I'm going to say I knew it, that it would get worse. Because it never did explode. I mean, every day it would come to a boiling point, like water boiling. But it never erupted. But this day it did. Well, he did come back, like an hour later. And I was ready to send his Bible to him, you know, put it in a box and mail it to him. Because I didn't like that feeling of being there, wondering, what is this guy going to do? And he asked my forgiveness. He said, it wasn't you. You know, this was in me. This kind of stuff. He was afraid of it. Because of what he might do with his anger. Talking about him reminds me of another one. I was in Upper Michigan. I was speaking to young people, and the youth pastor ran out. Now, that's strange. Ran out. I mean, I'm talking to kids. Ran out. What I didn't know, he got in his car and was driving out of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, as far as he could go to get away from me. And this is strange. But then the kids had all kinds of questions. And the next morning, I had a ministerial breakfast that I was to speak at. And I really didn't want to do this youth group at night because I'm going, probably the best thing is get sleep. So I go to this early morning, 5 o'clock in the morning breakfast or whatever. Well, this guy comes back. And see, I didn't know he was driving out of town. I just thought, I just wondered why he didn't just like walk out. He ran out. But the kids just seemed in the back. He came back and he said, "Logan, I've got to talk to you. I had to run out of here." And then he said, "I was driving my car. And I'm going, why am I going? Why am I way out here in the country? And I've got to turn around and go back somehow. I know I'm supposed to talk to you." So he comes back. He happened to be the pastor's son. And as soon as we go into the pastor's office, it's probably 10 o'clock at night, he starts having seizures. And I said, "Do you have epilepsy?" "No." And I'm going, "Oh, brother, so I am," by raising my voice, you know, "the name of Jesus, leave him alone." And I thought, I've got to get out of here. You know, let's get this thing under control so I can leave. My wife can say, "Jim, they're hearing you all over the church." Shh. I'm going, "Look." "What do you mean? Shh." Because you're frightening the kids. And I was. The teenagers said, "Let's go. Let's get out of here." They all got the creepy thing like one of the horror movies or something. Rosemary's Baby or Rosemary's Baby Baby or whatever. I'm with him all night long. I can't stop because whenever I tried to stop so I could leave, they would have horrible manifestations of demons in this guy's life. It was just awful. Well, it's 4:30 in the morning. I haven't shaved. In a half hour, I have to speak to ministers. And I look like death warmed over, you know, bloodshot eyes. You know, I was partying all night, gosh, with Jesus, you know. So I went to the motel where we were staying, shaved real quick, put ice cold water in my eyes, and went to this pastor's thing. But I told the guy, and I was going to be leaving. You know, I'm leaving. I can't. I have to be back. I'm not going to be up here. Sault Ste. Marie's where I met my wife. That's where I was in the Army. And you know, she had family there, and this is the end of our vacation, and I have to leave. So I said, "Call me, we'll make an appointment, and you come down to Child Evangelism, and we'll put you in the lodge." Well, anyway, so this guy comes down to the lodge, and at the same time, Campus Crusade and Navigators have been college students that were demonized for me. And one of the guys that came, he was the coach of the girls' gymnastic team, who had been an all-star gymnast. And I don't know if you've seen guys who are all-star gymnasts, but they're nice guys to have with you. You know, I mean, this guy, you know, had a waist like a girl, you know, shoulders like a football player with the pads still on. You know, I mean, this guy was a huge, muscular guy. And I said, and I was dreading seeing this guy, because what's going to happen? I mean, I knew what happened there. What's going to happen here at the mission? I said, "I'm going to be counseling a guy. I don't know what's going to happen, but don't be surprised. It's not going to be good. I mean, I don't think it's going to be good. We are going to pray for God's protection and so on. But I'm glad you're here with me because I don't have to keep praying and breaking and praying. We'll go with Scripture. And you can pray against enemy involvement." He said, "Sure, don't worry about it, Logan." So we did it in his room, which is real small rooms. And we're sitting on a bed. And he's in a chair. The chair just barely fits between the bed and the window. But we're able to get the chair turned around. You know, our knees are practically touching his knees. They're sitting on the bed. It's not the most comfortable way to counsel with no backrest. And I started praying, and the guy started making noises. And he grabs the chair. I've only seen this twice. This guy began to grow. Unbelievable. Like puff up. Muscles began to appear. He began to get taller, you know, with stretching or whatever. I mean, he seemed to be increasing in size. I don't mean like feet after feet, but bigger and brawnier. And this, you can laugh, because I did. You know, I mean, it was creepy. And this gymnast, coach. All city gymnast, or all whatever it was, you know, star, all-star gymnast, or whatever, falls on the floor in that room and puts his hands over his head and goes, "Oh no, oh no." I went, "Thanks a lot, you know." "I know it's creepy, but I don't need you on the floor. You know, look at wimpy me, and you're on the floor with all your muscles." But that guy did come to freedom. It was amazing. And when he went back, his girlfriend had never seen any of the, you know, the stuff we saw. She said, and she wrote me a letter. She said, "As soon as I saw him, I knew something wonderful happened. His eyes were different." Isn't that a blessing? You know, I mean, all the spookiness and all he put me through, I thank God because he wanted to serve God with all this stuff. So, anyway, things like that can happen. The offense can happen. If you're going to counsel as a girl, there's two kinds of girls. And I have two daughters. One is a no-nonsense daughter. Logical, you know, Terry. Boom, boom, boom. She knows where she's going. She knows what she's about. We wanted you to speak to what? Or congressman's on the phone for you. That was happening all the time. "Terry, how do you know congressman? They're calling CEF to talk to you about this issue. What do you think?" And all that. And I said, anyway, that's who she is. Then you have the kind that's merciful. That's a good combination in counseling. See, a merciful one that gets so merciful and so weepy and so caring maybe won't do the hard stuff to help this girl deal with the issues. So you see where the two could be such a wonderful combination, where one is showing a lot of love and compassion. Girls need that, but that's not going to get them free. They're going to have to deal with the hard issues. They really are going to have to go where they don't want to go and deal with stuff they don't want to deal with if they're going to come to freedom. They've got to get their life back under the Lord. So either one, I mean, if you're more matter-of-fact, you're saying, "Lord, help me to be more compassionate." If you're more of the, you know, loving whatever, "Lord, help me to be more firm. I need to be firm." Nancy DeMoss is a very good counselor because she can be firm and compassion at the same time. Okay, now let's go to another one. Now, this is Larry Coy. And remember, he's the guy that team taught basic seminar with Gothard in the very, very beginning. Do you see some of the stuff I did before is like this? Did you guys ever get the first one? The one from yesterday. I didn't get the originals back. Okay. Because that one I'm giving you is very, very easy to see and follow, and it has a lot more to it than, you know, like 3 pages here or whatever. It is good because it's a combination of a whole bunch of different ones put together that I thought was one of the best in teaching counseling. But you see that anything that is good in teaching counseling, there's going to be a similarity on what this guy said or what Bill said or what I said. And I always wanted to learn. I felt, if I can learn to be more skillful as a counselor, that's what I want to do. I know God has thrown me into this position, and I want to do that. So you've already looked at some of these things. We've already talked about that. And this is really hard at, like, Knoxville. Well, we don't do Knoxville anymore. But, you know, the you that have been with me, you've talked to some people that came up to you that want to talk to me and so on. And they said, "I just need a minute," but they really don't need a minute. They just really want to start. And there's no way with what's happening or what you're going to have to do or commitments you've already made to other people that you can do it. Remember he says the word that says note there? You know, if you can give an answer in 5 minutes, it's fine. But if not, we have to set a time. But sometimes we don't have much time left. Yes. You got two pages already, don't you?
It jumps from like page 1 to page 3.
It's on the back.
It's probably like 34 or 36.
Yeah, we're just looking at it here. We've got one that's double sided. It looks like the rest of them are.
Let me look and see if it's down here. Now, this is the next one. Then what happened is the back side didn't get printed. But thank you for your constructive criticism. And for now, would you please keep your mouth shut? Bless you. Okay. What we'll do is, we can go run off that page and see you guys get it. But just looking here where it says note, you do have that one, don't you? Of the front page? Yeah, well, that's important. Because if you try to answer in 5 minutes, someone who has a lifetime problem, the answer is not going to come in 5 minutes. It's impossible. But you say, I know that we can help you with this. Number one, give them hope. And then number two, try to make a time or give me a call. Or I don't have my reference sheets here, but if you will call me, I will look to see if we have someone in the area that could help you with this. And then it's nice sometimes that when the counseling isn't always trauma, awful, evil. And do you remember the name of that pastor in New York City, the Chinese pastor that wanted to talk to us? Do you remember his name? See, we had no idea, did we? I mean, I really didn't know what this Chinese pastor does, trying to reach Chinese in New York City, what he wanted to talk to me about. But it was a fun one. I mean, and to me, it was really a fun one because the guy did not have problems. The guy was having problems at church and the whole thing of being a pastor and all of that kind of stuff. And we had a lot of fun. You were there. Who else was there? You were there. I mean, it was really a fun time with this guy. And I followed him up since that time and talked to him. But it was really interesting as he was sharing different issues that he was concerned about. What are you thinking? Your eyes are going.
I'm trying to remember his name.
Okay. One of the things I thought was very interesting that he had, it was a problem, but it wasn't like icky. He grew up in, was it New Zealand? His parents were in New Zealand?
I think so.
Paul, was he a New Zealand Chinese guy in New York City? The Presbyterian pastor?
Yeah, I think he was.
Well, here's an issue now. This guy has an MDiv, which is, higher you can get as in the pastoral. It's one of the pastoral degrees, a Master's of Divinity. And he had an MDiv from a very good seminary and all. But Chinese culture overall are very degree oriented. That's a good word. And they didn't think he had enough degrees. Now, this guy looked really young, but he was in his 30s, way in his 30s, and just had a new baby or something. Anyway, and so one of the questions was, and it wasn't like to run his life, but here he felt God wanted him to start this church in New York City. I connected him, thank God, that I've been around a long time. I connected him with two wonderful gals that have high degrees from Taiwan that are ministering in New York City. They have a wonderful ministry that he should get in touch with. I mean, it's so neat when you can hook up people that I never knew these girls would ever know this guy, but I knew where they were. And, make these connections that maybe these gals could, they're CEF gals. You probably met them, the Chinese gals. They're so phenomenal. And they're sisters. They both have beyond BA degrees. They're brilliant gals from New York City. And they got a separate ministry besides CEF on a web stuff. And but his folks wanted him to leave this church and get a doctorate. And he likes studying, and he likes to have a doctorate. I mean, see, like what they wanted appealed to him? And that was the question. What do you think I ought to do? And I didn't say this, but in my mind, I've talked to him since that time on the phone. But will a doctorate degree make him a better pastor? Or will a doctorate degree give him more clout? Because I have a doctorate. You know, was it really for the ministry and I'll minister better, or is it really for my image and esteem? I didn't say that. I didn't know him well enough as we were sitting there talking to go there, but that was there. There's a time where you don't share everything. But I went more, if I remember right, and you guys remember better than I do, I believe I went on the calling of God in his life. You know, why did he go to New York City? Was God leading him there? Did God call him there? And did God close the door? Or should he just walk out with the kids and just leave to get a doctorate's degree because his folks, which he knows, would love to say all the kids have doctorate's degree and all the kids, you know, have master's degree and all the kids are really highly educated. Because that's so cultural. So there's a difference between cultural and God. And, you know, we all come from different cultures and we all come from things that are more important. The thing that was so thrilled in my culture is I was the very first person ever in our family chain line or whatever to graduate from college, and they didn't care. I just barely graduated. It wasn't like I had to get all these awards and medals hanging around my neck. You know, they almost showed me the door out the back door. But he finished first one in the family. Oh, this is wonderful. You know, I knew we had somebody smart in the family. I go, no, you had somebody that God put him there. If I had my choice, I'd have bailed out of there many, many times. So, you know, I didn't hit the obvious one, how this would stroke him. I went to his calling. And I never said, don't go. I didn't say, to go. But would you just barely start a church and leave? Just so you could get a degree? Is that, you know what I'm saying? That was my thinking. Why did God have you start this? Because it's not a going church yet. Remember, it wasn't going. And they were struggling. And one thing they struggled is he looks young. He was a very young look. I thought he was in his 20s. And that was against him. In the Chinese culture, the older, the better. I would be almost old enough to be their pastor. Almost. But I don't have a white beard. I need to get one of those white beards growing down. Maybe I could get one. I know they had some at Walmart you could buy and stick on. Because they think wisdom comes with being older. And so that was one of the things he said was a hindrance to him. I think I don't know if he told me that over the phone or in you guys' presence, that was very important in the Chinese, and he doesn't look old. And see, he didn't get married too much later, so he doesn't even have old children. So he could be in his 20s with a new baby and all that kind of stuff. So those kind of counselings are really fun. They really are, because it's not tragic. You're not listening to trash. You don't have to listen to details of trash, but trash is trash. Where they get all the details. I mean, garbage is garbage. And I don't have to sift through the garbage to find everything in there. It stinks. You know? And sometimes it's wonderful I didn't have to hear stuff that I didn't really want to hear. And that was really a special thing. Do you remember anything about that stood out? Anything stood out to you about this fellow and our time with him? Because we were there a long time with him. A couple hours, wasn't it?
Yeah. You did mention during the course of the session about, you know, what is the purpose of the education. And you asked him really with the whole question hitting the conscience thing. that was really evident when you asked him, is the education going to make you more effective in ministry?
I didn't remember if I said it or not.
And it hit him because he was just like, you know, and he nodded. He was like, you know, really intense on that. And I was like, wow, that was...
Chinese are intense.
Really good. Well,
where's our other Chinese guy? Where's our Chinaman? There he is. Yeah, I mean, especially in the culture, they're very intense people.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking a lot.
But yeah, it was just a really good conversation to sit in on and just share delight together, but talking about resolving the issues.
Yeah, and it was nothing really, you know, it wasn't a heavy one.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sit back, drink something, and whatever, you know. Because he just had... One, and it was all different things that he wanted to talk about to get them tied together because he can't talk to his folks. He's a pastor. He has no one to talk to. And that was talking to him. That's why I called him. I told you what I said when I called. I asked if he answered the phone. I said, I would like sweet and sour chicken takeout. And he almost hung up on me. And he does have a Chinese. No, well, don't hang up a slogan. Oh, good. <You know. laughs> But you know, it's to me that's what's thrilling, that if I can call him periodically and just for someone for him to talk to and encourage him. Because I haven't called him to find out if he was able to get a hold of the girls. Could they come in and help him maybe get a Sunday school going, but more like CEF type thing going there? Because he has no workers. I mean, he just said it's new and a lot of Chinese people and not a whole lot of people to help him. And maybe CEF can come in and do something because they do work in New York City. And I know the director of CEF there very well. I did their premarital counseling. The gal that's there. So, okay. Oh, the next page is really important. Page 35. Oh, man. You know, I just can't believe what it says. This is really profound. Okay, you will get it. See that they get that. But I want it back because I don't have any copies of it. You know, often I have extra copies. And be, oh, I'd love a copy of that. And I give it away and then I end up with the last one. And I know I have in my basement, I'm trying to think, it's quite a long wall. Maybe from there to there, not quite so long, but almost the length. I have these metal shelves that are open. And they are full of counseling notebooks and counseling material. And then I put, I mean, when you're teaching in college and everything, and I got all the counseling books that came out for free from the publishers, hoping I'd get them as a textbook. So I had all, and I'd hear someone had a notebook, I'd get that notebook, or John MacArthur had a super guy that was in counseling. You like the Christian Counselor's Manual? Okay, Wayne Mack and these guys that are with him came out some real good stuff on premarital counseling. I mean, so, man, I got more of that junk. I couldn't throw it away, but I have no place to put it. So I just put this heavy plastic over it so it's not going to get all dirty and dusty and all of that, and however high they go. It's just that most people wouldn't want to read through all that stuff or try to figure it out and not. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. But it all helped me. It all taught me something in trying to help people because I knew that's what God wanted me to do. So why not? It's like if you're going to be a carpenter, it doesn't make really wrong for you to buy different tools where you can do a better job with carpeting. Carpentering. Okay. Okay, I think, now look at... Number 7 on page 36, you do have that one. And I think Larry Coy had some, you know, pretty good there. Learn how to respond to their expressed needs as people are beginning to share stuff. You know, if a person is in anguish, communicate seriousness about what they're saying. What is hard to communicate seriousness is what they're serious about is so minor. You know, I mean, it's such a minor issue. You're going, I mean, I know I can't compare counselees to counselees. But your mother didn't make you stand on an icy stream and ask demons into your life when you're five. You know what I'm saying? But I have to realize that some people are, I mean, it's almost like they're in anguish because someone walked by and didn't say hi. I mean, you can get people almost like that. And you're going, there's something deeper. I mean, something really deeper when little or nothing is blowing them out of the saddle, just sinking in a ship as a Christian. You know, their Titanic is going down. But the idea is, yes, I can be evaluating in my mind, but I don't want to show my kisser as much as possible. Because they are in anguish over it. You know? If there's tension, try and to relax them. He put him as if you're counseling always men. But try to set up relaxation. If the tension builds, you can always call a break. Because a break, you know, let's take a break. And if you need a drink of water, you want to get tea and things like that. And often that breaks the tension that's going on. Also, because this is not here in the area of warfare counseling, but if there is tension, is it the enemy that's causing this person tension, or is it the person that's tension? You know, like the guy crying and he wasn't crying. Guys are angry and they don't feel mad at all. It doesn't make sense to them because they're having all this anger stuff, and yet it's like they're watching it happen. You know, somehow I'm being used and I don't feel angry, or I don't have any hatred towards you, and yet all this stuff spewing out is hatred and stuff. So I try to figure that out. You know, if there's bitterness, be sensitive to the hurt. Another thing on bitterness that if you didn't catch it when we went through regular counseling before different warfare counseling, and that's this. When we, remember, go through and write down the names of people, Neil Anderson will teach you to start at number one. Don't. Neil's wrong. And I've told him. I said, Neil, you're wrong. You start at the bottom where it's the easiest to forgive. But here's the biggest thing, the hardest thing that ever happened to you, and you want to start there? It's like, I'm going to teach you to swim, and I'll stand here. I'm going to push you in the deep end. It's 12 foot deep here. And you may learn to swim, or I may have to dive in and pull you out. So why is push them in the deep end when they've never forgiven? Why not start them in the shallow end where it's easy? Because whatever comes up first, second, and third, you know is what? First, second, and third. Then it gets less and less and less. Because once I allow bitterness in my life, it's easy to get bitter about things that I shouldn't have got bitter about. You know, but I'm already bitter. It's not that this made me bitter. It's because this happened, I'm already bitter. I just added it to my list. And you start at the bottom, and we pray up the list. See if you remember the counseling we've taught you before. In doing with bitterness, what are the two areas that people usually leave off the list of bitterness? See, what's first on the list is usually mom and dad. Why? Well, the people that you're with the most are the people that can hurt you the most, right? I mean, who can hurt me more than, you know, some little kid that goes by and goes, you know, oh, I'm devastated, you know, no. But let me tell you, when your mom and dad go, you know, it's a different story. Or your brothers and sisters, I mean, the closer the relationship, the potential for bitterness is there. You are going to be hurt and offended. But as it goes down, it's going to be less. So I'm not shocked I said, oh, I hate to say this, Logan. I know you know my father. I said, yeah, he's first, isn't he? Yeah. I said, don't feel bad. Let's get rid of it, you know. Don't feel bad. But after, before mom and dad, there's two that often people don't think of, but as soon as you say it, like, boom, light comes on.
He's one of them, God.
Yes. God is the one that's most difficult for someone to ministry to say, I resent God. Or, I hate God. Or, God messed me up. That's it. See, the two, somehow, it's so much a part of who I am. Even when I pray, it doesn't come to mind, but I just say, is there anything else? Let me ask you this. And when we say that, like the light really comes on. Yes, I beat myself up all the time. And what we tell people that are always down on themselves, and I'm so dumb, I'm so stupid, and all this and that, I said, you know, we have a treat for you. Every Easter time, we charter a plane to the Philippines. And you can sign up for that flight, and we fly you over there, and then you can be in the Flagellini Parade, where the people walk with their shirts off and whip themselves with whips with, you know, glass and things in it, and you beat yourself, and it's just once a year. And you get it all done, and then for a whole year you're okay, and then next year you fly back. I mean, they laugh, but that's what they're doing. You know, they're beating themselves up. You think of some of those dumb old cartoons where a guy would take a bat and knock himself on the ground. Boop, 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 boop. You've seen that. They get short. Oh, a lot of Christians are doing that. Oh, how can I do that? Oh. And then they never want to do anything because they're dumb, they're stupid, they're, you know, all this stuff. So, I mean, I try to make them laugh because it's so stupid. But that's what they're doing by beating themselves up. I remember as a man speaks in his heart, what? So is he. And if he doesn't change his thinking or his speaking in his heart, I haven't brought about a biblical change. I mean, you could stop doing something because God says, thou shalt not. And you know how you had a biblical change? Is when you no longer think like that. That's what's important. Because thinking causes actions. I mean, I know you folks said, don't you guys ever think? You see, you had no idea what I think. Mom, if you knew, you would throw me out, you know, when all goes on up here. But it does. Thought produces actions. It goes this way. But I'm not usually conscious of the thought so much as I am seeing the actions. So I stop doing something, but when I don't think like that, that's a biblical change. God has really changed. The heart has changed. I need to stop. But God says, don't. Then don't. But it doesn't mean I don't want to. And it doesn't mean I wouldn't like to. It doesn't mean I don't think about it. But right now I'm able in the flesh not to. But it thrills you when you don't think that anymore and you realize something is really... I told you about sucking my thumb. You know, when that something doesn't happen that always happened and isn't happening anymore, God is doing something. Okay. And then... if hostile, meekness. But there's a point you don't have to take it. You know, I've had some teenagers I've sent out. Because I'm not going to put up with it. And I'm not here to be his punching bag. Or take verbal abuse from a kid. I mean, I want to help you, but you're not going to talk like that to me. If your folks put up with it, that's fine, but I'm not your folks, and I will not put up with it. If you're going to be decent, get out. And I sent a kid out one time. I wasn't very old either. I said, you're out of here. And if you're not going to be decent, then don't come back. And he went out and sat in the waiting room and stuff for a while. And his folks dropped him off, going to come back. And then he came back, and he said, I was wrong. And I said, well, yeah, I accept that. I just want to help you. And we're able to get beyond that. But there's a point where I don't have to take hostility. Am I really helping someone just to let them vent all their stuff on me? I don't think so. And then if jovial, communicate you have a sense of humor when appropriate, and underlying when appropriate on your thing. I mean, we have laughed, and I don't remember what we laughed with Andrew when we're counseling that guy. I know we laughed, but there was something going on, and it wasn't like he didn't take it wrong because he was laughing too, because it was like either stupid or intense or I don't know what all. But if someone is not taking it seriously, I have a problem with that. You know, they've come and it's like it's no big deal, and I don't know why you're, you know, so uptight about this. You can terminate the time by saying, you know, I don't think I'm helping you, and by meeting with you, it's not going to be good. You know, because we didn't let our kids go to a basic seminar until they were 14 or 15. Because I wanted them to get it. I didn't want them to be inoculated at 9. You know, sitting there and hearing this stuff. And it's just, you know, they're not there yet. And so when they really need it, it doesn't have the same effect. I mean, I can watch a basic seminar thing. And I went to so many of them, I could tell you exactly what Bill's joke is going to be right here and where the pause is going to be and where this is going to be as we were counseling. Everyone in Seattle. And we had tons of them with thousands of people. And after a while, it didn't do to me like the first time I went there and was, you know, full of guilt and bitterness at Bill and mad at my wife for calling him on the phone and all this stuff. You know, you just hear it, and you hear it, and you hear it. Well, I didn't want my kids to be there. I wanted when they heard it, it's like, wow, this is so great. This is so neat. Right, and I've heard that before. So that was our issue. And I told Bill, I think you're letting kids come too young. At that day, not today. You know, you're going to give a kid a sex talk. Why don't you start at 6, you know, because they probably know more than you do by the time they're 7. I mean, it's awful. It really is awful what's out there. I mean, you know, with working with little kids, it's just unbelievable. The trash and the evil. But see, in those days, it wasn't like that. It wasn't available. I mean, yeah, some movies had innuendos. You know, some movies did say a few words in them. But there's no nudity. No, if there was an affair, you never saw it. You never whatever. It just faded out where it was alluded to by words. But now there's nothing left the imagination. I've sat in a doctor's office and I've been embarrassed. I don't mind watching the news. If I have to go to a doctor's office or go to my wife's doctor, on one of the game shows, the guy's kind of not that great. Family Feud. You know, I don't mind watching. It passes the time. I can't read my heavy-duty books with the TV going, kids squawking, and everybody talking. I got to have more quiet for concentration. Why read pages? Well, I read that page, you know. I want to take notes. I want to mark, so on. But then they get into, as the stomach turns, oh, evil. I can't believe it. I'm sitting there with people, and I'm going, you know, and I can still hear it. It's like, what in the world? In mixed company? In whatever? I mean, I stopped going to movies when Lucy was on. You can imagine what this does to me. When we don't have a TV, I just get knocked off the chair. I said, Mark, you won't believe what was in there. I said, I don't even want to tell you. I said, it was vile. Really vile, illy, filthy. And it's like, oh, it's nothing. People are there, little kids are watching, and I'm going, ooh, I wish I could throw a rock through the screen. But what are kids raised on this stuff? You know, their folks are watching it. It's on all the time. No one goes, oops, oh, whatever, they're just young, they shouldn't see this thing. You know, this thing is XXX R-rated. Huh? So, you know what I mean? They ought to have something. Why can't little kids watch immorality? I mean, not try to fill in the blanks. There's no blanks to fill in. Anyway, I know I'm old. Thank God. You know, what hope is there for kids to be decent, that have unlimited access to music, videos, computers? Now, and it's not the kids are dirty. That's not really it. They're being programmed. And I'm so glad in my home I had a drunken dad, but we were not programmed in immorality. My dad had real high standards. He used to tell me he'd be drunk and everything. I want you to know I've never lied, and I wish you lied and didn't drink. But I didn't say that. He'd knock me flat. I said, yeah, even though I'm a drunk and mean and nasty and everything, but I never tell a lie. That's a lot of people, I never, whatever. But what about all the stuff you do? Okay. Pauses are good. Okay, one thing we didn't go on, and nine is sort of there, and that is when someone is talking and sharing, sometimes it's real easy to start going to the solution. But sometimes, even though the solution in Scripture and reading Scripture, before you go there, you may want to summarize what they're telling you for their benefit. Is this what you're saying? You know, is this what you've been communicating to me? This, remember, I don't write it down, but I can remember it. So I want them to know that where we're going is I know exactly what they were trying to tell me. And people are interested in answers if they know that you heard what they were saying and that's where you're going. But if they're not sure you heard them, then why should they listen to your answers? So that's important. And that, the way you do it is summarize. And if they say, no, that's not exactly what I meant, I said, okay, say it again, because I really want to know exactly what you think the issue is. And maybe they throw a few pieces in that are not really essential, because we're looking more at the root, and they want to be sure you've got all the around it, but that's fine. Because when you go to the root, they understand the root. You know, people are bitter, but you will never find two people bitter for the same reasons. Yeah, maybe a father, but it's a different father. You know, maybe the church is a different church. It may be a religious organization. It's a different religious organization, or their concept of what's wrong with that organization is different.